Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. Didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No. You're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax, I would sit on my ass all day, I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had...
Well, I'm on Face Slash and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen, right in front of the board. SP Futures down 34, NASDAQ Futures down 218. They were worse. Dow Futures down 38. What do you say we spin through the whole list here, Matt, in case we... get some people and miss it at the bottom of the hour. We got some stuff moving this morning.
For sure.
Some of the commodity stuff is very odd, as we saw on Friday. Over in Europe, we've got DAX actually up 158.6%. FTSE up 38.4%. CAC round up 34, which is 0.4%, even though the headline is European stocks slide as precious metals sell-off weighs on markets. Looks to me like they're up, but... Never let the facts get in the way of a good story, as they say. Asia, another big difference, though. A Nikkei down 667, 1.2%. Hang Seng down 611, 2.2%. Shanghai down 102, 2.5%. That's a big move for Shanghai. South Korea stocks fall more than 5%, triggering temporary halt in trading. So some stuff is moving around the rest of the world here. On Friday, we had the S&P was down 29, NASDAQ down 223. Dow down 180. So Friday was not a good day. The bonds down 1 basis point, 4.23. The Bund unchanged, 2.85. We've got oil. This is a big move today. Down 335, 61.86. That's 5%. So it had raced up almost to 65, 66. Now it's right back down again. Brent down 338, 65.98. Gold, which got pummeled on Friday, is actually up $42 today. Silver up 460. It was down like $30 on Friday. So it was unbelievable moving silver on Friday. I know that if you're trading silver on the CME, get a load of this, Matt. One contract is 5,000 ounces. So a one lot, if you were caught the wrong way, was 150 grand.
Yikes.
Now that's a number, even for a guy like you.
Even for a guy like me, that's
even for
sure.
A guy like you, you know. Foreign exchange. The dollar has been getting pummeled, but now it's steady today. We rallied on Friday, but we're at 118.6 against the euro. We were 115 something 3 weeks ago. British pound 136.9. It was under 135 for a couple days. So we've had big moves there. To crypto this morning up 680, but 77,808. Now if Russell had. At 120, the crypto world was at $3 trillion in equity or in value. That's got to be, what, less? Now it's down to 60% of that. So I don't know how much further it can go without having some margin calls and things in there, because people have found a way to borrow against it. Ethereum is down $27. It's 1.2%. So that's a 22.94. I don't know exactly what the story is with that. But we have all kinds of interesting to see on this gold and silver drop. You know, if the market is headed this way, the same direction. I don't think it is. We had some moves down last week. We also had some moves up with some of the, with some of the earnings plays. Some of them were pretty extreme. I mean, Microsoft was down $60 that one day, so that's kind of a lot for Microsoft.
Definitely.
And we had Meta was up, but then it came down a little bit on Friday. So. Today, individual stocks. I've got Disney up $1.90. They're one of the few stocks with earnings this morning. Johnson & Johnson's up $1. McDonald's up $3.50. But nothing Meta's down 713. Google down 280. Microsoft down another $3. Apple down $1. So market is looking a little wobbly lately. I don't know if it's coming from government. A lot of it's maybe just a little too high. I think there's maybe some margin issues on some of these metals for sure. I mean, we had the SLV was traded last Friday. It just goes to show you, it's one of our biggest, well, no, it isn't really. It's a pretty sizable position we have in there for our clients. Between us and our clients, it wasn't our call necessarily. Our stuff was always discussed. We have pretty good position in there, and it was trading 112. I think it was a week ago Friday, and I don't usually speculate for people, and because just not the way I do this stuff. So, but often I see these puts that are 20 cents, right? So I buy these puts when it's at 112. 2 hours later, I saw them at like 58 cents, and that's good enough. You know, I mean, we made a little bit on a small trade, and everything's happy. Those things would be like $35 now. Of course, they expired that day. They weren't the ones that are this week, but I had a feeling it was too high. But you just don't. I had a feeling it was too high at 85 or 95. When you're managing money for people, you don't do that. I mean, you're not doing the kind of speculation that, of course, if you bought them and you made $30, nobody complained, right? But you just try and maintain what you say you're going to do, and so on the way down we lost very very little, if at all. So you know that part's pretty good. Now the GDX was well over 100. Now it's 94.52. So I mean, you really have to be. It was like one. I think it got to. Let me see where it got to. GDX is the gold miners index. Throw a chart up here. It got to tippy top was. I'm gonna say 112. 109.29 on one day. 107. Let's see. 112.16 by my chart. Now it's down to 94.
The gold miners index, is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know they were still mining down there.
Oh, there's people. It's got your. Barrick Gold's in there, and your Newmont, and those kinds of people are all in there. It's the reason why we were in that, I don't know if it did work for a while, but then it really did work. Sometimes it's not, it's not a zero sum game, because if gold's $2,000 and guys can make some profit there, if it goes to $2,500, you would think, even though expenses might go up a little bit, that they're really going to kick some ass at 2,500. If it goes to 3,000, it should be like all profit. Mm. So I thought they were lagging the gold for a while, and that's why we were in there. And it turns out I was right after a little while. But yeah, they were lagging the gold a little bit. Because, I mean, you know, if your cost is 2,500, it goes from 4,000 to 6,000. You know, it's just like you're a soybean farmer. You know, you put everything in the ground, and it costs you $2.50 a bushel. And all of a sudden, it goes from 5 to 12. Well, the $7 pretty much is yours, right? Mm. You might get a little expense along the way, but very little. So anyway, we were in there, and it got, we tried to roll the puts up, and we rolled them up twice in 1 week, and we should have done one more, but it ran up and down so fast we didn't do it. I mean, we were like, God, how many times are we going to roll these puts up? All it does is go up, and then it came flying back down. So probably could have done a little better in there, but you can always do a little better, right? You always got to be critical yourself, because you want to be perfect, and it's very hard to say it's hard to be perfect.
Well, we used to have our ag man, Greg.
Yeah.
Do we need a gold man?
Well, I think we're going to get Greg one day a week, even though he's starting to trade early in the morning. That's why he's not here. He's across the street.
Oh, wow.
He said he's going to try and give us a half hour every week with just all the stuff that's going on. So.
Perfect, yeah. Well, Greg, if you need a gold man, I might be your guy.
You're the gold man?
I like to think of myself as a gold man.
Well, do you have coal miners? Do you have which individual stocks do you like? You like Barrick? You like Newmont?
I think my qualifications are I like gold.
Ah.
And that's about it. It kind of ends there.
Well, you could be president.
Eh, sounds about right to me.
So now what? We're shutting the Kennedy Center?
Why?
Because nobody wants to perform there with his name on the door. Now it turns out the whole place is, it's going to be built better than ever before in his image. So sort of sort of there. Yeah, I have something here that, you know, yeah, some of our guys aren't going to want to hear. No, these are 2022 numbers. Now, we've been coached by our, you know, president, never said a true statement in his life, except by accident, that every single person who's really of Hispanic descent is suspicious. Hmm. All on. So there's an outfit here, the International for Tax and Taxation Economic Policy, ITEP. This is in 2022. There must be, maybe there's an update somewhere. But they came out with some pretty interesting numbers. These are key findings in this report regarding undocumented aliens. Undocumented immigrants paid $96.7 billion in federal, state, and local taxes in 2022. Most of that amount, $59.4 billion, is paid to the federal government, while the remaining $37.3 is paid to state and local governments. Undocumented immigrants paid federal, state, and local taxes of almost $9,000 per person in 2022.
Wow.
In other words, for every 1 million undocumented immigrants who reside in the country, public services receive $8.9 billion in additional tax revenue.
That's a number.
And, of course, our people, you know, everybody says, no, they don't pay anything, right, which is total BS.
And Chief, I could be wrong on this. They don't really see much of those benefits in terms of, Social Security.
I'm getting to that.
Yeah.
I'm getting to that. More than a third of the tax dollars paid by undocumented immigrants go toward payroll taxes dedicated to funding programs that these workers are barred from accessing. Undocumented immigrants paid $25.7 billion in Social Security taxes, $6.4 billion in Medicare taxes, and $1.8 billion in unemployment tax in 2022. No, they don't get any of that stuff. So the idea that they're screwing us is, it's a pipe dream. At the state and local level, slightly less than half, 46% or $15.1 billion of the tax payments made by undocumented immigrants are through sales and excise taxes levied on their purchases. That's why the idiots on TV will say, and even low-income people of any kind, low-income citizens, don't pay taxes. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't pay federal income tax, you pay everything else. You know, we got the four-stool tax thing in this country, and they conveniently forget that part. Most other payments are made through property taxes, such as those levied on homeowners and renters, through personal and business income taxes, blah, blah, blah. So, but the interesting part is the human part of it. And this is income tax payments by undocumented immigrants are affected by laws requiring them to pay more than otherwise similarly situated U.S. citizens. Undocumented immigrants are often barred from receiving meaningful tax credits, and sometimes do not claim refunds they are owed due to lack of awareness, concern about their status, or inefficient access to tax preparation assistance. So a lot of these guys pay in, even if they deserve a refund, they're afraid to actually send the thing in. Providing access to work authorization for undocumented immigrants would increase their tax contribution, both because their wages would rise and because their rates of tax compliance would increase. All right, but here's the demographic side. It says here, who are undocumented immigrants? They are diverse. While most undocumented immigrants are from the Americas, almost a quarter are from Asia, Africa, Europe, and the Pacific Islands. Just over 4 in 10 are from Mexico. Families. Close to half of undocumented immigrants' adults are married. Compared to U.S. citizens, undocumented immigrants are way more likely to have households with children. Mixed status. Most undocumented immigrants are members of families that have mixed legal status. A total of 12 million U.S. citizens, including 6 million citizen children, live in households with mixed legal status. In other words, an uncle, a father, a grandfather, or somebody is not a citizen. Working. Nearly all income received by undocumented immigrants comes from wages and self-employment income. 86% from wages, meaning they're working for somebody. The rest from self-employment income. The labor force participation rate among undocumented immigrants is higher than a native-born population. Duh. Undocumented immigrants make up 4.7% of the workforce, despite only being 3.4% of the overall population. I guess they're just a bunch of lazy people, right? This one is interesting. Most undocumented immigrants, adults, have lived in the U.S. for 16 years or more. And now we think they're all criminals. Yet I'd say most of them aren't. Well, the undocumented population is more geographically dispersed than in prior years, large share of this population resides in just a few states. Only half of the undocumented population lives in California, Texas, Florida, and New York. And I have to believe that Illinois has got to be pretty close in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I know we don't want to have people that necessarily want the facts to get in the way of a good story, but this has been going on a real long time. Becoming a citizen is probably a little too burdensome for a lot of people, and it's been being made more burdensome from this this particular administration. And from what I read of the test, it said most citizens could never pass the test. Mm-hmm. You know, I know people here that have been here in this country for a while, and they're citizens, and maybe their wife just got it like last year after 20 years. This is not...
Wow.
You know, before people constantly criticize, and everybody's a crook. I mean, do I think that a few of the people that came across the border are involved in the drug trade and murders? Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of people here that are involved in drug trade and murders. Does not make it right on any part. But the fact is, this the overwhelming idea that everybody who's Hispanic is a crook and needs to be thrown in jail is kind of crazy.
Yeah, just wrong.
Just wrong. I mean, but evidently... Jim, you're awful silent over there. By the way, where's our sports report? What's going on with sports? There's not much going on this week.
I wasn't even mentioned on the show. So
it's because you were in the men's room.
I wasn't. I was here.
Well, right. Jim's here, Jim. Yeah, Jim's definitely here.
Yeah, and you forgot to mention me, so... Well,
there you are. Mr. Jim Lawler, he was skewered by not being mentioned, but now that you're mentioned, so come up with a sports report.
Come up with a sports
report. How bad are the Bulls? Did you watch them last night?
No, I did not.
Oh, God, you don't know how happy you are. So let me get this straight. If you continue to pound on a really solid rock and you go through 10 hammers, the day that two more hammers show up in the mail, is that a good day? You think they're going to work when the other 10 didn't?
I don't know. I was watching the Knicks-Lakers.
Well, that was a better game, I'm sure.
Lakers-Knicks won, 112. All the celebrities were out there. Tracy Morgan.
And why weren't we out there?
Spike Lee. You don't hang with those crowds.
Why doesn't our producer get us press passes for, like, the sideline?
You don't have a sideline on a basketball. It's on the court.
Well, whatever.
But our Bulls did get spanked 134-91 by the Miami Heat. No, they had it. It was Lakers this. They had all the celebs out in Madison Square Garden. You know, you had Spike Lee, but Spike Lee is a big Knicks fan. He's always there. You had Tracy Morgan. You had Daniel Radcliffe.
Wow.
Out there, you had Ben Stiller, Ben a big Knicks fan.
But no Matt Byrne.
Matt Byrne, no Jim Lawler, no Chief.
No.
You know, I've been hearing rumors that we're banned, that the Dolan family has banned us from Madison Square Garden because unkind comments on the show.
I would love to go see a game. I've been there twice, but not since it's been remodeled. If anybody, the interesting part, Madison Square Garden, is it can be mobbed, which it usually is. 20 minutes after the game, you're lucky to find one guy, because it sits on top of about 12 rail lines.
Yep.
And everybody goes downstairs, and they're gone. Or you walk outside and grab a cab, and he gone. It's amazing the transportation in and out of the place.
Yeah, well, it sits above Penn Station.
Now, contrast that to Chicago, where the United Center has a rail line that goes through the parking lot, literally, with no station there. Because we want everybody to drive and park, right? Because the Wurtzes are making money off the parking lots. God help you if you put a station there, right?
That's true, but, you know, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to make money some way.
The two or three times I went to Yankee Stadium, all I did was take the subway, get off right across the street, and walk in.
Yeah?
It's pretty darn nice. Anyway, the Bulls last night got behind by missing three-point plays because they had no kind of offense. So when you get behind, what do? You have three-point shots. You have more. At one point, they were 2-for-33 on three-point shots. But the next guy down couldn't wait to wing one up. What is wrong with this picture? Does anybody think that's entertaining ball? Which John?
We have John Flanagan.
John Flanagan. Jan Flanagan, how are you? Did you miss my whole thing about the undocumented immigrants and how they're not all crooks?
Yes, you have to digest it for me.
The bottom line is there's higher percentage of that population works than the rest of us. Most of them undocumented adults have lived here for 16 years or more. They're not all crooks. And they pay 90-some million dollars into programs that they're never going to be able to access. Unemployment, any of those kinds of things. So the idea that they're all crooks and every one of them should be sent halfway back is kind of crazy. Just saying.
Sounds like a broken system to me.
Well, yes. I mean, how difficult it is for people to become citizens is even more bizarre. And the idea...
Well, I mean, that we have so many people not, you know, legally, who are being fleeced.
Well, I mean, it's kind of always been that way. Now, it's difficult. People get here on a visa and they get a job and they just stay, or they come here and they're somebody's wife or husband and they just stay. And
like our first lady.
Yeah, our first lady, or like Elon Musk.
How about Michelle Wu, you know, the mayor of Boston, who said the other day that it's the right of everybody in the world to come to the United States?
Well, I don't know about that.
No, I don't either.
Well, but man, you and I kind of got here because there was this potato famine, right?
Among other things.
Yeah, I mean, it's the.
I mean, it's looking more to me like, you know, there was no chance for success after the potato famine when it came to farming, because what I've been seeing in like, you know, family history and stuff about, you know, the eldest son being the one who gets everything, everybody comes after gets nothing, made it really difficult to prosper as a farmer if you had any gumption. The land was, not, there was no such thing as crop rotation or anything like that. And you'd never.
How do you rotate when all you cook is potatoes and turnips, or all you make is potatoes and turnips?
Well, and you couldn't get a chance at owning anything ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have no more of this history than I'm trying to think. My family, the grandparents all came from the other side, right? I know my grandfather, even though he came here, and let's talk about a weird story. I think he came here with his uncle on a visit, and he was like 12. And he was the second child in the family. This is just from Italy. And I think that the tradition was that the first son became a priest. And he wanted no part of that. And somehow or another, I think when he was here, he found out that his older brother died or something. So he ditched his uncle and didn't go back with him. And could you imagine the uncle coming back to your brother and say, "I lost your son"? Well, yeah, by the way, where's my kid? Well, he's in America someplace. Well, I know he was a water boy on the railroad, like riding the rails with the hobos and stuff when he was 14. And eventually became a master boilermaker working for the railroad. And I know somewhere along the line he got his citizenship. I wonder if my grandmother ever did. Because she came over in steerage at age 7. I don't really remember her ever voting. I mean, I don't know.
My own anecdotal research is that it was unusual for immigrant women to acquire citizenship, because they typically did not work unless they had to. If they were, on their own, if they didn't have anybody, in the family to support them. And the numbers in my own family, women who immigrated, I can't find evidence that they're ever, acquiring citizenship by the same paths that their husbands did, and the husbands all did, as far as I could tell. But it seems as if, the key to getting a job with any kind of sustenance, power, was becoming a citizen. So any kind of a city job, policeman, railroad jobs, things like that, required you to be a citizen. And women weren't in the running for those, so it seems that there was just never any kind of attention to it.
Well, the regular schmuck, the guy who showed up here at Ellis Island at, age 12, or matter of fact, remember what got me started, Jen, for those that don't remember, Jen helped me out a lot on the census stuff, because I started to get some interesting things about my family, because a lady, I'm talking about a weird story, but my uncle that killed World War II, taking a bridge going into Germany. After the Battle of the Bulge, 3-4 months after, when they had moved out of there. And he, anyway, somehow or another, his Purple Heart got lost. And this lady contacted my brother and said, by the way, your uncle's Purple Heart's like in the wind. And there's an organization that actually gathers up medals from people and tries to get them back to their family. And anyway, so we ended up getting, but she was giving me a little bit of the history of the family. And, you know, people came through. But anyway, the connection between her and the Howe family was one of her relatives, this is after my grandfather, I guess, was dead, came over here. And when you got to Ellis Island, didn't you have to put down, I don't know if you had to, Jim, you had to put down somebody here you were going to go stay with, right?
Yeah, a sponsor.
But even though...
Very detailed, you know, the address, you know...
But the sponsor never had to confirm. I don't think the sponsor ever had to confirm. I mean, this guy comes over, and he puts down that he's going to stay with... I can't remember his name, I think it was Marie. That was going to stay with her. This is after her husband died, her first husband died, and he went and just showed up, basically. So the guy's, let's say he's 22, and he goes and stays, and I'm sure he went right down to the you know, whatever the livestock place, the Union Stockyards, and probably got a job the next day, right, doing God knows what. Now, what was the procedure for that guy to ever become a citizen? Did he ever? I mean, in general, I mean, you didn't become a citizen as soon as you end up in Ellis Island. I mean, obviously, there better be some procedure after that. I don't even know what it was, do you?
No, I mean, in the recent past, I'd say maybe in the last 20 years, it was unknown that these records even existed, but the city of Chicago electoral rolls, so the voting lists for 1888, 1890, 1892, all of a sudden surfaced. You know, they've been sitting around for, you know, how many, you know, decades. Nobody even knew they existed.
Sitting around where?
They were like in the basement of City Hall. And they've been now digitized and searchable on Ancestry.com. And as part of it, you know, this is all handwritten stuff. And, you know, they go on and on and on. This is, you know, laborious work. But they in every election cycle, they would produce these things. And it involved having the name of the person, the address, your employment, and then the details of your citizenship. So it would have like a couple columns. So one would be, where were your papers first issued? You know, your declaration of intention when you went to some courthouse somewhere, when you first landed here and said, I am here and I intend
to. I thought you just did all that at Ellis Island. They just have to train and went wherever you went.
Yeah, but if you wanted to become a citizen, you had you had to apply like in a city court. And, you know, the city, there was the Cook County Circuit Court. And there was a city court system. This is in the 1870s, 1880s. You could apply in either one for citizenship. And to be on the election rolls, you had to certify the date and place where your final citizenship papers were issued. And although I don't know for a fact, I assume you had to produce these at some point, because these became valuable documents to families to prove that you had entered the country on date so-and-so. And 6 years later, you were still here, and you would produce those original intention papers, and then you would get, you know, a court to say, okay, it looks like you arrived here. This court said you were here, and here you are again someplace else now, maybe. And you want your citizenship, and you get attesting witnesses, people who will certify, yeah, I know this person. They're not a danger to this country. You renounce your allegiance to your former ruler, and then you get another, you know, paper. And this is all logged on these election rolls.
Really?
And without that, you were just SOL when it came to voting. So I think that was, if you had any intention to vote, and I, you know, a lot of people had never had such a thing in Europe and were interested.
My grandfather was he was there the first guy every time. My aunt said the first time he could vote, he was the proudest man on earth.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you can see why, because this gave you, you know, a sense of belonging in a kind of system that respected you in ways that you had never been respected before. You know, the election rules in European countries, to the extent they had any election system was pretty selective. You know, it didn't extend to, you know, anybody. It was like the way the laws were here originally. You had to have property, you had to have some kind of social standing before you were given the right to vote. It wasn't an automatic thing. But that's really, I think, why citizenship became such an integral part of the immigrant experience, because people saw that as a way of gaining political power. And in the course of that, after, you know, enjoying that kind of freedom to express yourself at the polls, other things came along with that too. You could vote in blocks, you could vote your ethnicity, you could vote your neighborhood, your precinct, and you would get things you never could have dreamed of having in another country. So.
Well, I know he was, he didn't want to move in the Italian neighborhood. They moved to Inglewood, of all places, which was very diverse at the time, and didn't allow anybody to talk Italian in the house, because we're in America now. We talk English, not Italian. So my mother knows. My mother is less Italian than me, and I took 1 year at Notre Dame. So the ones in Columbus, though, most of them knew Italian, because the older ones there never learned English. I don't think my great grandmother ever learned English, but I look back on it, I don't think my grandmother ever was. And she must have had a Social Security number, because my grandfather died, she got his part of his pension. So maybe, I bet that's when she got her Social Security number. And what'd you need one for?
One instance I found in my own family on my mother's side, where she had a great aunt who was born in Wisconsin of Irish immigrants. But she's, you know, born in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, came down to Chicago and married a guy from Germany, who did not become a citizen until much later. And apparently when she went to apply for Social Security and they started, you know, asking about her spouse and stuff, it turned out that she, you know, according to the laws at that time, she was married in 1907 to this German guy, and she lost her U.S. citizenship by having married an alien.
Really?
So she had, because I found all this stuff where, you know, she applied for citizenship again in 1935. I thought that this woman must have been crazy. She knew she was born in Wisconsin, but why was she applying for citizenship? But she had lost it, and she had been told this by, you know, somebody.
I never knew that you could lose it.
Yeah, and this I think was the case. It was not a wide window of time where this then was amended, where you didn't, in the 20s, I think they amended it so that you didn't automatically lose your citizenship by marrying an alien. But that's pretty draconian if you think about it. You know?
Yeah, well, I'd say so. Of course.
But she didn't get her citizenship, and then he got his papers the next year.
It wasn't, in those days, it had to be just voting, though. There was no unemployment, there was no Social Security, there was none of that stuff, there was no Medicare.
Right.
I was just, the thing we were talking about, the thing you kind of missed here, John, is this ITEP. They were talking about the people, because Matt says more than a third of the tax dollars paid by undocumented immigrants go toward payroll taxes dedicated for funding programs these workers are barred from accessing. Undocumented immigrants paid $25 billion in Social Security taxes, $6.4 billion in Medicare taxes, and $1.8 billion in unemployment insurance taxes. So, if you're undocumented, this is the part that I don't, as Elon Musk and his, whatever, I'll say goons, piled into some of these places and found out all this stuff in Social Security. Did they ever find the part about the $25 billion in taxes that people paid that didn't go to any legitimate number? What the hell is that all about?
That's the other problem with this, is that if there's a Social Security account, so that there's, you know, deductions being made on behalf of some number, this is not a secure system either. So this is not something, you know.
I don't think they care if it's secure one way. They only care if it's secure the other way.
But I mean, when it comes to like employment verification or. It's easy to do E-Verify, you know, they want it to be easy, but, you know, it's not required to do that. And, you know, you kind of take your chances if you don't go through that. But so many people, Tom, have multiple Social Security accounts, numbers, fake. You know, there may be deductions, but where are these Is this something that you know, are you going to make six claims for Social Security when you?
Well, I mean, everybody's worried about the guy who's going to screw the government. Looks to me like in the overwhelming part here, the government's screwing them.
I don't know if the government's screwing them. The system is being screwed.
Well, I won't call him a buddy, but somebody I know is an accountant that does a lot of accounting, tax accounting for like restaurants and small businesses and stuff. The last time I ran into him in the local library, shall we say, he's telling me he found a guy who's retiring. He's 66. He goes, the guy's worked for 25 years for this place. Paying Social Security, I mean, he's getting his W-2. Social Security, unemployment, and Medicare, and the guy's not a citizen. So he's not going to get any Medicare, any Social Security, and any unemployment. Well, he's not going to get unemployment because he's retiring, but because the guy's totally screwed. Where'd all that money go? They obviously took it.
You know, this is the problem when you sort of, you know, take citizenship off the table as something that is a desired thing to acquire, and it becomes a kind of ho-hum thing. And
I think it's very desirable. I think it's hard to do.
Mm. Well, it's, you know, but it's treated so cavalierly. What's the advantage of being a citizen?
I don't think it's treated cavalierly at all. The Hispanic people I know, they keep making the test harder and harder, and it's very difficult to become a citizen. I know one of the guys in the building, his wife just became one, 2-3 years ago, and it took her years, and she was so happy. It was scary when she finally got it. Went down and, where do you go to get sworn in? You get on the McCormick Place or someplace? Where do you go? There's a bunch of people.
That or Daly Center. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think you get sworn in individually. It was a big group when she went.
Yeah, it's a group. I do have a question, Chief. I mean, I had a friend's mom who was not a citizen, but she had permanent resident status because she married a U.S. citizen. Is that still the case? She finally became a citizen after 25 years living here, but she had permanent citizen status because she had married an American.
Well, I think there's a question here, and I don't know. I don't know the answer. And a lot of people will get their Social Security cards. They come here on a work visa and things like that. The card's legitimate, right, John? So I mean, they actually are registered at the Social Security thing as Jim Lawler. So when his check goes in, it probably goes to his. But my question is, if Jim Lawler doesn't become a citizen, can he access Social Security, even if he still has his 50-year work visa, if there is such a thing?
If I have $1 million, yes.
Well, I don't know. Do you still get yours? Do you go on Medicare if you're not a citizen, even if you're quote legal some way or another? I don't know the answer to that. Do you, Jen?
No, and I would think that would be a pretty good incentive to become a citizen, to make sure you could collect Social Security when the time came.
Yeah,
I don't know that it is. And, you know, I don't know anybody personally that I you know can point to who's getting benefits who's not a citizen. Now, I mean, there's disability and stuff that maybe short of having an annuity, Social Security allows for that. But I'm not an expert on that.
Well, if you have one of these are all kinds of questions. I wish we got to get an accent expert on here. But yeah. If you come over, if you have a
ask AI,
yeah, ask AI. I got a story about gay, and I got something for you, John. I was going to wait till John Lee came on because I was going to let you guys know about you. You're the greatest night of your life is in store for you. I mean that or not, but a regular guy comes over on a student work visa, or a work visa, or he's a student and he gets one, and all of a sudden after 2 years he gets laid off. Can he get unemployment, or do you got to go back, or what? He's been paying into it, right?
I assume he does.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if he. I bet he doesn't. Well, if you got a work visa, you don't have a job. Do you got to go back?
That'd be interesting. Measure the paperwork on that.
Yeah. Anyway, in case John Lee doesn't call in, I'll mention this to you because I'm sure you'd like to have this opportunity. I'm minding my own business, driving home last night, or actually yesterday morning, and I hear this ad on BBM. Evidently, there's a new Viagra pill. Have you heard about this?
No.
There's a new Viagra pill. It's Viagra AVG or something. The first pill they've, whoever makes Viagra, has come up with in 40 years, right? It is so powerful, it'll be the greatest night of your life. It works in 10 minutes, and it lasts for 14 hours. I'm sitting there going, if I get Flanagan and John Lee to think tomorrow, I'm going to have to say. Now, my question for you, since you're an attorney, let's say, first of all, to both of you guys, I would recommend that you might want to check with your chiro and your cardio guy before you do this. Just saying. Now, what if it only lasts like 12 hours? Do you get the swim? Do you get money back or what? Plus, what exactly lasts for 14 hours?
I don't want to go there.
I want to go on that one. Family, but that I'm sitting there listening to this going, I can't believe I'm hearing this. Works in 10 minutes and it lasts for 14 hours. Who the hell? 14 hours is kind of a long time. Shouldn't you be going out to dinner at some point?
I got to say, Tom, as a 73-year-old man, I can't think of anything worse.
What do you mean? It could be the greatest night of your life. It's at any age.
The greatest night of my life is when I can get to bed at 8 o'clock and be asleep at 8:30.
This will be a whole new world for you.
I can't even go there in my imagination.
I can't.
Been there, done that.
I don't know.
How quickly these things have lost their attraction for me.
I'm like 14 hours. I mean, I do know some of the dudes on the trading floor took, you know, weren't supposed to take the regular Viagra if you were under a certain age, right? Of course, these guys did it anyway and had to go to the hospital, which wouldn't have been too pleasant. Ugh. Anyway, I don't know. I'm listening to this ad and I could not believe it. The greatest night of your life, 14 hours. First of all, it's already daylight by that time, right? You're way past nighttime.
The greatest night and morning.
Night and morning of your life. Good Lord. no sleep, evidently. Anyway, I could not believe that ad. Matt, why don't you figure out how much that thing costs? Sure. AVG or whatever. What is it, like 500 a pill? Or whatever. I mean, if it's the greatest night of your life, you'd probably play a G, right, Jen? I mean, what the hell?
Yeah.
God. So we have all kinds of, we have people just want to make sure that this, I wish I knew the whole history of this whole thing, Jen, and this whole, how hard it is for somebody to become one, what, the first day, how do you apply, how long does it take, what do you have to do? I mean, I know there were a couple of times in presidents where they gave, even in those situations, didn't Reagan did it and somebody else did it, right? Was it Obama? I don't think it was somebody. I think it was Reagan that gave the people that had been here over 5 years automatically. There was a fast track, but still, you just didn't walk in and get it, right? I mean, what are they?
No.
Even,
no.
I mean,
you know, there's the discussion of amnesty is always lurking in the background here, and that's it seems to be that. You know, the direction that Democrats want the country to go in, that eventually this is going to become something they figure they can argue or embarrass, you know, the opposition enough where anybody who's here and can prove they've been here for a certain time period, and it will be a very short time period, I think, if the Democrats have their way, is automatically granted some kind of protected status. Whether you become a citizen or not is probably beside the point then. And I don't think citizenship is something that is really, you know, in the Democrats' agenda at all. I don't see them ever talking about that. It's all about protecting the people who are here and encouraging more of them to come and enjoy the same.
Status. One is enough to me. Somebody who's been here that length of time and paying taxes and stuff. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, I don't know what my breakdown would be. It wouldn't be 2 weeks. But I think it would be, I'd say 10 years is enough. I don't know where my number would be. But, if the person has a family and the kids are going to school and the old man's working, and what's the harm in making the wife a citizen? What are we doing?
I'm just looking at some AI stuff because I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here on stuff. But Unemployment is, administered by states, so you can't really say across the board how it's treated. But there's one statement here. It says non-U.S. citizens must have had valid work authorization when earning wages and when applying for benefits. So that means the wages you earned were when you were authorized to work here. So I don't know how many people fall into that category. You may have, if you are a documented worker, meaning that you have an account, you've got a social security number, you've got some kind of state ID, and this deduction is being made for unemployment compensation, can you ever enjoy that if you don't enjoy work authorization? Should you be able to if you don't have work authorization?
My theme here, Jen, is that in a lot of the stuff that I witness arguments and people have, even sometime on the show, everybody has very strong opinions, and a lot of people have very zero knowledge about what they're talking about. These guys are all crooks. Well, none of them are crooks. They all should just be given citizenship. I don't necessarily agree with that either. But the more you dig into it, the more you realize that most of the people you're arguing with have not, they either listen to the administration, even I wouldn't listen to for a second, or they listen to somebody else who maybe I wouldn't listen to for a second either. And the question is, what is the real story? And we don't really want any facts getting away of these stories anymore, do we?
The facts aren't very pretty, too, Tom. I mean, this is also bound up with trafficking and smuggling, too.
It is in the last couple of years, and maybe before.
And I think it always has been to some extent. And there's things that indentured, things that we wouldn't even want to have enforceable if we knew about them. But if people come here under some kind of bond to somebody, and this is, they are kept in some kind of slavery situation, I think there's always been this kind of invisible or under the table kind of stuff. And now it's rampant, really. I mean,
we don't know that. We have somebody who tells us that it is. But we don't, is it any worse?
Well, why wouldn't it be rampant, Tom?
Well, I don't know. Why? I mean, I've heard serious stories about
money. There's big money in it, and
I've heard serious stories in some areas of the South Side. Some of the kids are essentially don't have families or are being manipulated just like somebody coming across the border.
This is part of the reason that there's been, I think, a relaxation of this to the extent that people have no family structure, period, and that they've either been sold to somebody and the money used somewhere else, or they're in some kind of bondage or control of a cartel of people who are using them as employees or sex slaves or something else. So
it comes down to we have people really tied on one side of the aisle. I don't know why they're doing this, but whatever is it, you're trying to vilify the people because of the country. I have no desire to go to Cuba, but I've met 5 to 10 Cuban people I knew reasonably well. I'll tell you what, talk about the salt of the earth. They are so happy here. And all they do is say they can't believe the people are still living where it is now. I've met probably 7 or 8 people from Iran. Every one of them's got multiple degrees, has a good job. The guys were all engineers. The women were all in the healthcare industry. They can't wait to get out of there. So just because you vilify the country doesn't mean you vilify the person that's here from there. They died and went to heaven, for God's sake, and they know it. I mean, they like America more than the people that are here, for God's sake. It's a general term, I know, but it's. See, I mean, you can't have a. Well, we do have a president that, roasts the Somalis because the country sucks. That doesn't mean the people that are here suck necessarily. I don't think, but some people want to. I'm saying it's a very huge. I've had arguments, and I think people on the show talk. We talk about the economy and the Federal Reserve. Most of the people I talk to don't even know what the Federal Reserve is. But you got to be careful when you. I'm saying I do too as well. Everybody. What did what's her name say? She cleaned it up, Erin Burnett. Opinions are like bottoms. Everybody's got one, and they all stink. I think we are lacking. By the way, did you just hear this morning that all these people are being laid off because of AI? You ever hear of this outfit, Forest something, Forest Consultants or whatever? They came out today and said it's, and we've suspected this on the show. You and I talked about it last week. They said 66% of the firms that laid people off and said it was because of AI don't even have AI. Do we ever tell the truth in this country anymore?
Well, it's an easy place to lay the blame.
Well, I mean, PTI, we don't have any AI. Well, I guess, you know, the people, I mean, the clearing firms maybe, but we... So if we can't,
AI
we can't two.
Get pretty full of itself at this rate, Tom.
Yeah, if we can't two people, you say because it's AI. Somebody go, what AI? Where's AI? it was something like 60 or 66% of the companies laid people off, saying it was AI. Don't even have AI. How bizarre is that?
No, it's an insidious thing, and it's easy to kind of make it, I guess, seem even more powerful than it really is. But it's powerful enough, and it is making a difference in industries. I think it's changing media, it's changing writing, the journalism, such as journalism is. But I question how, you know, valuable it is as a fact-checking tool or anything else, because it's based on, you know, something that has been already manipulated in whatever kind of form to make a database, and that database is hardly perfect. You know, it's different databases and different versions of the stuff, but we're going to kind of enter a period where there's a war of the databases, and you know, you can't trust, I think, any of those databases at that point, because they're all being invested with a lot more credibility and care than they really have, and I think that this is going to make newspapers totally obsolete. It may make journalistic writing or online source stuff equally unreliable.
Yeah, but Jen,
there's no fact checking or peer editing.
Even
or
you know that if in high school, if nobody wanted to do their Latin homework and everybody wanted to copy, somebody, one guy had to do it, or there's nobody to copy from.
Right? I know that well.
Well, Latin, yeah, there's
probably the only one. It was one French ever, for me. It was Latin.
I was so bad at Latin. It's probably the only time I ever copied anything. But to this day, I'm saying I might have been guilty, but I don't know. Anyway, when you see this obviously Carl and Kevin and those guys are better at the internet surfing than I am, but every time I try and find something on the internet now, I can't get there. It's from someplace. I mean, maybe the Tribune's going to go out of business, but they do have a few articles, and there are still a few people writing. Like Kevin says, there's people in all these other areas now, but still, it's if I get an article from the Washington Post, I can't get in unless I subscribe. Same thing with the New York Times, LA Times. And clearly, I can't. There was a site I went to on. We were doing a 3 or 4 day thing a long time ago, Jan. I think you were part of it. We were talking about all the how the tuition was going up at all the schools, right?
Right.
So I dig online, and I college. And there's this site that's maintained by, I don't know, I think maybe some college group. Every single college. First of all, I had no idea how many colleges there were. It's got to be like 100 of them in Illinois. I mean, it's you wouldn't even, you go, and I'm like, where are these? I never heard about them. All these little liberal arts schools and stuff, their tuition every year, out of state, in state, how much is room and board, how many people go there, that kind of thing. And the statistics go back at least to 2000, maybe to 1995. And I'm sitting there, I'm like a pig in the slop in this site, going through all this stuff in all these schools. And especially you got the part when everybody decided to charge out-of-state people more than in-state people. That was like a year 2000 phenomenon, I think. Anyway, I try and go back there. Well, now it's a pay site. You can go there once or twice, then you got to pay. Well,
right. How do teaser things, yeah. They get you hooked on it.
But how does AI blow through all this stuff? Do they hack in? I mean, how do you get into the DePaul Law Library and start reading people's, law dissertations and stuff? How do you do that without, you hack in? Do you pay to get in? What do you do?
Well, you have to have a library card, a student ID.
So AI has a student
pay,
ID
pay
card?
For privilege. All these, like even academic databases that I use, in research on academic subjects, to get access to articles. Say there's a journal article you want from 25 years ago. If it's a particularly important article, and this is all in the pricing of it, you can pay, $40-$50 crack just to get a PDF version of that on your computer. Now, you could drive around to various libraries and find one that actually has this maybe on microfilm and spend, several hours going through it and taking copies of it and so on, which is pretty hard to do. At least if you got a bunch of things besides that to do as part of your project.
Well, it's easier now that you have a car.
Yeah, but even it's still a tremendous...
But where would you go, like Newberry or someplace?
Well, Newberry has, and that's free in that, if you give them $5, you can get a reader's card for a year. And, they have access to lots of databases, National Archives, newspapers and so on that you would have to pay for as an individual to have a personal subscription. They have an institutional license, and you can go in and use it there. So that's a great thing. But, that's an unusual kind of library, and there's not that many of them in Chicago.
Well, like Harold Washington, there's no way getting it from there, or is it?
No, I don't. You can't access newspapers.com or any of that stuff at Harold Washington.
Well, you used to be able to get a tape of every newspaper ever printed in Chicago. You probably still can't there.
The Chicago Public Library, if you have a reader's card, they have some newspaper databases. It's a lot of the Tribune, not the Daily News, but a lot of the Herald, the Chicago Examiner, the Herald Examiner. It's very scattershot. It's not like a long run of these things. So, but if you really needed access to a wide range of these things, it would be extremely expensive to purchase the rights to get to it, and it would be on an annual basis or 6-month renewal where you'll pay again before long. It's just so that there's all this information common. It's not the sort of thing that I would say is freely accessible.
Well, that's my point. How the hell does AI get it all? Just for instance, I've been using them. I always talk about revenue per share for a company. So I'd Google whatever. I mean, IBM's revenue per share. They'd come up with some half-assed number, but I would just, since I was on there, I'd go to like Yahoo or somebody that actually gave me the numbers, and I always do them by hand. And now I notice that the AI number is, the last 10 times I've done it, has been spot on. So it's at a point where I'm getting a little lazy, which I probably shouldn't, but somehow or another, they're either getting into Yahoo, which I guess you can do for free, or maybe they're getting into Bloomberg, which I don't think you can for free. I mean, I sure can't. No. Bloomberg is still like
I would bet that there would be, that would be easy enough for Bloomberg or some other, operation to sell access to that, because it would have to be a large amount of money if this has wide exposure. If you've got AI being tapped into, how many thousands of times a minute every day.
Hey, Jim, have you spotted anything over there? Why has silver just dropped $10?
No, I haven't. Why? Because someone is shorting it. I don't know.
Dropped $10?
$10 and 10%. Dropped. 10% in like 2 minutes.
Dropped.
Hey, when I access both of you guys, let's change topic a little bit, John, because this topic is fascinating, but I don't know what the answer is. It just seems like part of it, you have to be careful. Part of it, be careful if you get laid off. Make sure your company either has AI before they... So, we've seen what happened with the silver on Friday. We've seen what happened with the gold a little bit. What we also have seen a country that over the last 20 years, 17 years for sure, has seen a remarkable... And this is not political. This is just the facts, ma'am, as Joe Friday used to say. We've seen a country that has sort of split apart between the wealth and the working. That doesn't mean the wealthy people don't work. They do, or some do. It doesn't mean the working people don't have a 401k and haven't participated. But by and large, the massive amounts of wealth you see have been made from the market houses and whatever. Baseball teams, football teams, that kind of thing. And we're looking like the last few days, people were taking a look at this going, I wonder what if... And without getting in the value of some of the companies, Jan and Jim. I mean, I could say, and you can put out pretty good statistics to say some of the stocks now that people love, well, Microsoft was $500, now it's $427. In terms of revenue per share, they're higher than anything I've ever seen, even before the 2000 crash. However, you can't trade like that, and you can't really invest like that because the company might still be onto something where other people are going to fall out, and they are going to grow faster than other people. They have advantages. You never really know. So you got to be careful that you don't just say, gee, I think this stock's too expensive, therefore I'm going to sell it this morning, and all the other people are going to figure out what I figured out by noon, and I'm going to make money. You can't do that. Or, I mean, in my experience, you can't. Or even if you're right, you get carried out early. Now, my question is, this has gone on for so long, and we've seen baseball teams, football teams, we've seen some cars that are $100,000 and blah, blah, blah. What if, let's just pick a stock. What if Tesla, now some people, and I've documented the numbers, they got $11 billion for carbon credits. You could make the argument that the place has never made a dime. And oh, by the way, their sales are dropping a little bit as of last quarter. You could probably get somebody to say, because Musk is such a genius, they're gonna combine with Starlink, and the stock is gonna be from 422 to 600 in 2 years. You can find that person, I guarantee it. What if somebody else says, I don't know what this thing's doing here. If this thing was 100, I wouldn't buy it. Now, my question is, what if the second person's right? What does that do to NBA salaries? What does it do to Major League Baseball salaries? What does it do to the price of skyboxes? What does it do to, you know, this wealth bubble that's been kind of carrying us? What does the country look like if the market drops 50%? I don't want to even think of it. But what does it look like? What do we go back to, or do we go, or is it a whole new area? Jimmy, why don't you go first? You've been thinking about this for a while.
Go first. In regards to
what do you think? What does the country look like if that happens? Does it mean your cable bill is going to go down? Does it mean the NBA players not going to be making 50 mil to sit on the bench? Or
that's a good question. I mean, if we do and the market does go down, I would assume yes, it would correct. I don't know. I mean, when you take sports salaries, what did it do in the 1930s during the Depression?
Well, I'll tell you, the whole time that Soriano was here, the price of outfielders didn't go up. He was here 8 years. Right?
Right. Well, maybe it won't. I really don't know. What I do know is that you won't have a bunch of 401k millionaires. And, the government might have to work. Interesting segue into that was, I had dinner with my father and a friend of his, and her daughter, and the question came out: when was the last time that the government actually really worked?
What do you mean by worked?
Well, when we felt worked, that they were working for the American people.
It's been a while.
not this. Well, you're in my sandbox, so no, I'm not going to cooperate with you. I'm going to blame you. You blame me. They are elected by the American people to do the American people, but yet yesterday while watching, I guess, MSNBC, you had a bunch of Democrats and Republicans on there blaming each other for the shutdown. And the last time, unless I'm wrong, correct me, Mike Johnson told the Republicans, don't show up.
Yeah.
And now they're dumping it on this. So they're doing is calling each other names, blaming each other. When was the last time the government actually did work?
Yeah, I think it's been a while. John, how long would you say? First of all, let's answer the first question first. What's the world going to look like? And we're actually going to force those guys to agree on something.
I think, if there were to be that kind of illumination where, none of this stuff is anything approaching the value that people say it has, I think the first place you'd see, a complete collapse is in retirement accounts, pensions, public sector pensions primarily. It, you know, stuff that's kept afloat by, you know, a healthy stock market. And I could see, you know, bankruptcies in cities, states, pension funds, and that would be, you know, a real, you know, displacing kind of earthquake type of natural disaster, because people would be, you know, without a safety net. There wouldn't be, you know, it'd have to have the total expansion of some kind of welfare system, which, you know, pensions were supposed to take the place of. And then we're kind of right back where we started from. And just as a sidelight to that, in past, you know, economic downturns, Tom, what was the status of, you know, sports franchises? Did any teams fail in the Depression?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which ones?
Well, I mean, the look at how many, there's only two of the original football teams were together. The NFL are still playing, the Bears and the Cardinals.
Yeah, the Cat and Bulldogs went under. There were a lot of other teams that went under.
In the 30s?
Oh, yeah.
And how about baseball?
I don't know that baseball, they moved from cities. They were all over the place. They scrambled around.
Yeah, the reshuffling, you know. I mean, there were families that, you know, got out of the business, but I don't, you know.
There were shuffling. Hockey only had six teams.
Yeah.
But in the regards, John, to public pensions, look at Chicago. The policemen's pension fund's broke. The teacher's fund is broke. If they had to pay out all the pensions today, they couldn't do it. They're already at that level.
All right, and that's, you know, looking into the future. If there were a, you know, a collapse of their investment portfolio, they'd have to stop sending out checks tomorrow.
Well, it could be like the case of Providence, Rhode Island, a long time ago in the 70s. They went broke, and the guy gave out the checks, and he used to say, hey, by the way, you really can't cash it because there's no money in the account. But the law says that I have to give you a check. So here's the check. Check literally was worth the paper it was written on, very little.
Well, we have, you would think, there's so much abuse. It's a little bit of a history here. When PTI first started, Audrey still has her Series 7 here, and her 63 and her 4. So she, you know, she could help out if we needed her, but she's more into real estate. But when Audrey was here, Audrey is, I can say nice things about her because she's not listening. Audrey has an amazing personality. She can open up any door. And got the big all-over-her-face smile. And she has that personality that she went and was looking at a lot of pension funds when we first started, before I realized how crooked it all was. And I should have known before we sent her out. But Aud would come back and say, I went to 10 places, and 9 of them basically slammed the door on me, but one let me in. It was a great day. John, my personality is not like that. If I get tossed by 9, I wouldn't care about the one who let me in. But she's not like that, you know. And she did a lot of work with the police pension fund. Matter of fact, she walked in the St. Patrick's Day parade with the guys who ran the police pension fund. And so I was trying to get those guys, because their expenses are really high, right? They pay some consultant a bunch of dough to go out and get all these money managers. He hires the money managers, and they pay them all 1% a year. Then they pay full price for execution for doing the trades. And some of it, they do it through minority firms to charge 3 times more than other people would even consider charging. I mean, you know, it's scary crap. This is 1990-something. And at that time, they were probably 93-95% fully invested, Jimmy. And now they're down to 40-50.
Yeah.
But if you were to take...
Look on your property tax bill, it'll tell you.
But if you were to take the 1.5-2% a year in expenses, what I was trying to talk them into is for us, give us a piece of the money, we'll just index it. You know, we'll just maneuver S&Ps, Qs, and maybe some extra, you know, XLF if we thought the banking index. We would just buy some index funds back and forth for them, and essentially not try and pick stocks or anything like that. And by the way, we would do it for like, you know, 0.2% or some ridiculous number. They were paying the consultant a bunch, and all the people managing it were getting a percent. You know, by the way, then they were going out to somebody else for the execution. And I said, look, we'll do the execution for like next to nothing. Just give us a chunk. We'll show you. By the way, Northwestern did this a long time ago. And you wouldn't have all these people with their finger in the pie. Well, if you add, say that was 30 years ago, 25 years ago, and think of 2% a year that you didn't have to pay. Well, what's 2% times 25? They're now went from 93% down to 45. Duh. The math kind of matches up, doesn't it? People have, I won't say stolen, but people have. You didn't have to do that. You didn't have to pay that kind of dough. But they did. Now, one day, Audrey said, "Well, by the way, are we ever going to get some money from you guys?" They go, "Oh no, we love talking to you, but you're not getting a dime. You're not connected." Okay then. So I mean, I could be real bitter about this stuff. I'm not, but I mean, I think we'd have done a better job just putting the money in indexes than they've seen, and we would have done it for, I'm going to say, a tenth of the cost, maybe a 20th of the cost, John. So it's not like they're where they are because they don't belong there, and of course you've got people retiring at age 52, and you're paying them instead of saying no, you can retire, but you're not going to check till 65. You want to work in our forensics division or our computer division, we'll train you. If you want off the street, nobody wants to be running down the alley after thieves when they're 55 years old. But that doesn't mean you get to home and sit and get another job. I mean, how did this all start? How did we get there from here, Jen?
Well, there was too much money around, and you know, so many ways of fleecing the funds before any retiree gets a crack at it. So, why would they have, pay through the nose, on any kind of a trade if they didn't have to? But they have to is the point, I think. Somebody has determined that this is part of the price of doing business for these things. And so there's no way that you're going to get, efficiency doesn't count for anything at that point, or sound management or anything else. So, it's bad enough. These things are not working actuarially because you got people retiring too early, but the fund itself is just something that's being skimmed constantly. It isn't that this money just kind of dribbles out and nobody knows where it went. It's being wasted deliberately on inefficiencies that are kind of a part of the whole system now, and I just don't see any pension fund, at least in Illinois, that's really immune from that. It's just this is how they've gotten used to the people they deal with, and there's just fantastic amounts of money being thrown away, just wasted.
Well, I mean,
because as you say, there'd be any number of ways you could do this more cheaply, and maybe get a better return in the process too. But it's not even something that's on the table. It's not something that'd ever go out and change or do differently. Where would that saved money go anyway? You go out the door in somebody else's pocket. So.
Well, I mean, is the idea that you had to be one of these people who was connected. I mean, I elected not to go down that road. I mean, I probably could have gone that way, but I didn't. There were at least one firm I know of got a bunch of people to put some money together, and they were politically connected. They ended up with, I think it was a mid-cap fund, Jen and Jimmy, and they got themselves a 4 or 5 year track record. It wasn't even very good. But then all of a sudden they got into all these different pension funds and they sold to somebody, and the people who put the money up in the first day made like 20 times what they put in, because they were able to, once they got the city business, that is, somebody else was ready to buy them. I mean, this stuff happens, and you wonder why people at the end of the day are broke and other people aren't. I guess, Kevin just texted in, what happened to sports franchise in the 80s and 2008? I will say this, that Jimmy, can you remember, what year was Soriano signed?
Ooh, that was the mid-90s, because he was with the Yankees, and then he went back to the Yankees. And, I remember when we saw it was mid-90s.
Well, where I'm going with this is whenever you do something like this, I mean, you look at the, I don't even want to go where Indiana's going with the Bears, we talk about a bunch of idiots, but when you if we sign John Flanagan, we're a 10-year. He's on a scale of 1 to 10. He's an 8 outfielder, okay, and he's 25 years old, or he's 27 years old. We give him a 10-year contract. Well, I don't think, unless he's, you know, drinking from the fountain of youth, when he's 34, 35, he's probably not going to be as good as he is there, certainly his last year or two. Assuming he doesn't get injured and screw up the whole thing. Now, somewhere in there, there's some determination from you or your board or whatever. He's got money, I guess it's all you. You say, okay, what is an 8 on the scale of 1 to 10 outfielder going to be making 9 years from now? So you're going to pay John Flanagan $20 million today. And he's a 8 or 9. He's really high end. Somewhere in your valuation, you're going to say that 8 years from now, when now he's down to being a 6, he's still going to be a good ball player, that the 6s on a scale of 1 to 10 are making $20 million or less, or more. So I'm actually making an investment, and based on inflation and the way things have been going the last 10 years, he's going to be worth even more then. So I'm solid on this deal. I think that's what happened when Soriano got hired, signed. Because he was not a bad ball player. He was a good ball player the whole way through. Just after 5 or 6 years being here, what he was being paid was now egregiously expensive compared to other guys of his skill level. Is that a fair statement? It was never that he was a bad guy, or he didn't show up, or he was a dog, or anything like that. He wasn't. But all of a sudden, there was a period of time when where you could go out for $3 million and find a really good outfielder. And he was being paid 8. He was in one of those pause areas. Do you agree with me or not?
Yeah.
I mean, there have been some. Go ahead, John.
The corollary to that would be, pension funds have invested heavily in commercial real estate, and it's not just U.S. pension funds that did this, but in this country, but pension funds all over the world. Thinking, this is a sure deal. There's no reason to think it wouldn't be a sure deal, and yet, boy, you look at people's impression of real estate investments 10 years ago compared to now, especially downtown areas. I think that the biggest casualty in all of this will be pension funds.
And who is
banks too?
You open this up now. You got to. When you came downtown 40 years ago, you'd see the whatever building. It might have been, Continental Bank owned the mortgage on that place. And the places weren't as expensive, or First National or somebody like that. I won't say the whole thing would be. Now, do you even know who the players are? I mean, who's 175, the insurance exchange? They just went under. I mean, all these places are all essentially been kicked back to the lenders. Who are they, John? Is it groups that put the pension funds together? So there's a Flanagan Inc. on it, but it's really 5 pension funds that you've pieced together to get the money.
Yeah, and they've got their security agreements that stipulate how much of the share of the debt they own. You got pension funds who have pieces of a lot of that debt. You got pension funds owning, the buildings or pieces of the buildings too, so they're on the equity side of it too.
But you can't really dig under the skirt and find out who it is, though, can you?
No. And that's of course a real problem.
If you found out that the policeman, I don't think they did, but you found out the policeman pension fund owned 40 buildings downtown that are just getting their ass kicked, I think you got a problem.
Right. And how would you know unless they actually admitted to it, I mean, the Chicago Teachers Union did this where they took money that was not designated for anything other than for benefits for its union members, and they threw it all into buying a new headquarters over on the west side.
They also threw it in the mayor's campaign.
Real estate investor too, which was not their money to do it really, but if that that to me is just kind of a microcosm, small
example. John, if the city ever, well, I tell you what, if I ran for mayor, I think one of my, no, I wouldn't get a vote. I think the city has declared bankruptcy and straighten some of this out. But how do the people on the teachers board, how do they not have liability for ponying up all that money for Johnson's campaign and this building like you're talking about, that's not in the charter, is it?
No.
Why do they not have personal liability for that?
There's a reason why the teachers' union has sat on their audits for so long, going on 6 years now, and you know, made just sort of a partial attempt to explain how their money is being spent. But you know, just what they've admitted to and what they spent on political campaigns, and not just for the mayor, but other people in state offices, it's a huge amount of money.
Well, that's I don't, as you know, I don't agree with that either. So first, but I can't agree with you. We can't do that. Question is, if you and I are sitting on the board and are asking us to vote for that, how do the two of us not demand, or we'll bring Jimmy with us, how do three of us not demand, hey, you better get me a legal opinion from, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe before from some real law firm that says we can do this, or I'm not voting for that. It doesn't look like to me that I can vote for that at all. How do they get around that? To me, it's, if you just go ahead and go way off charter for some places, aren't you taking a little bit of a personal leap?
Well, you would think, but I have a hunch that that's all been bought and paid for ahead of time, so there's nobody feels like they're doing anything other than what's already been ordained, and that their vote, however they, whatever risk they think they have personally, I think that, they're able or encouraged to look the other way and go along with it.
Well, okay, so...
And there's money changing hands for that, too.
All right, so the market drops 40-50%. City is even deeper crapo than it is now. And everybody looks at this Chicago Teachers Union, and two teachers lob a lawsuit in saying, I want all that money back that you gave to the mayor and all the other stuff. Why is that not in our pension fund? I mean, maybe it's not part of the pension fund. How is that not in our operating income? Once it gets to court, how does somebody defend themselves? I'm not saying it's going to happen. What if it did?
No, and who would take the case, and what could be used, just to wear them out procedurally and build them into Never Never Land before they ever got anything? I think this is all part of what they've got in their back pocket.
Are you saying that the legal system doesn't work for anybody who doesn't have a lot of money, especially somebody else's money?
Yep. Since you put it that way.
I mean, it really does it?
No, and the worst thing is to get involved in some kind of a legal dispute and to see what can be done to you. When you're acting in good faith and you're a hardworking firm or whatever, and you can just be spun around like a hamster on a wheel by the other side.
What do you say we go to a quick break and then we'll have we have Audrey? Do we have Nancy? We have somebody.
I see her.
All right. SP Future, get a load of this. Silver was down 10 bucks. Now it's only down 2. That's a quick $8, John. It's only 5,000 ounces. It's a $40,000 swing on a one lot, for God's sake.
What the heck is going on?
What the guy say? What in the wide world of sports is going on here? SP Futures down 29. Nasdaq is down 1. By the way, we do have the Olympics to look forward to this week, so we got something to watch next week. We got something going on. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. That's 800-989-1415. Paid for by Term Direct.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's a man. Muscle and blood, muscle and blood, skin and bones, a mind that's a weak and a back that's strong. You lose 16 tons, and what are you getting?
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Al, Jim Lawler in studio, John Flanagan on the line. We have Audrey Johnson on the line, Jim, and we got Matt Byrne on the board. I like that strong of back and weak of mind.
Yeah.
We used to know some people. Anyway,
still do. I'm here.
Now the weak of mind aren't necessarily strong of back. They might be weak of back as well. God, S&P futures up down 35. Nasdaq futures down 206. Dow futures down 48. We're kind of continuing this from Friday as a sell off in the currency, the dollar, sell off in some of the stocks like Microsoft and the crash in the metals on Friday are unnerving people a hair here. Not so much in Europe. DAX up 179.7%. FTSE up 63.6%. CAC around up 43.5%. Asia, not so much. Nikkei down 667, 1.25%. Hang Seng down 611, that's 225. Shanghai down 102, 2.5. South Korea stocks, which had been on an all-time high. We got to get Rita Coolidge on here. An all-time high to Bond Girl. I fell more than 5%, triggering a temporary halt in trading. The old circuit breaker thing. Boy, oh boy. Audrey was on the floor. She knows what those are. They are. If you're trading, they are a pain in the ass, boy. On Friday, Dow was down 179, S&P down 29, Nasdaq down 223. So if we stay here, this will be 2 days in a row of this. Bonds unchanged 4.24. The Bund unchanged 2.85. We've got oil. Big news this morning. Dow's down almost over 5%, down 346, 61.75. And supposedly there's now going to be talks between us and Iran. Brent down 346, 65.86. Boy, I'd love to get this information a little earlier. We could have made a few bucks shorting this oil, you think, guys? Just saying. Gold up 25 bucks after being collapsing on Friday, 47.71. Silver down up 2, 80.55. And just for laughs here, I'm going to say gold topped out at... I won't say. I'm going to look right at the chart. I think we were... Let's go to one year. We were at 53.03. 55.86 was a high, and now we are 47.71. That's a move. Mm. That's a serious move. Crypto, we've got the Bitcoin down up 688, but 77.816. Again, it's now like 60% of where it was on its top. Another 20,000-30,000 here. I think that affects the market big time. Don't know that for sure, but I think it would. Euro is 118.2, which is higher. It was down a little bit today, but it has been up. British pound 136.5. So we've had a 2.5% move in these currencies in the last few weeks, which is a big deal. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
For sure, yeah. It is currently 7:37 on February 2nd, 2026. As for weather in Chicago, 23 degrees at O'Hare and Midway, high of 30 for today. Some flurries today and mostly cloudy. Tonight, slight chance of snow and a low of 17. The big news in sports, the NFL Pro Bowl is on Tuesday, February 3rd. It's the NFC versus the AFC. Catch that at 7 p.m. But the big news is the Super Bowl. That'll be this Sunday. Seahawks versus Patriots. We've seen this before. Last time the team faced off in the Super Bowl was in the 2015 for Super Bowl 49. Patriots won that game in a tight 28-24, though ESPN, Gamecast, and DraftKings favor the Seahawks 61-39%. We'll just have to see for ourselves what happens on Sunday, February 8th at 5:30 p.m. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
What, you have a big party to go to?
I do, actually, yeah. My my girlfriend has someone from one of her theater productions is having a get together, so we're going to that.
Are you a guy that's going to go the doorbell with your elbows carrying stuff, or are you going to walk in and say, what's for dinner?
I think the latter, yeah.
Okay.
What's for dinner?
Yeah.
What's on the grill?
Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed.
Yes, you do.
What, do you want a few guests like that? Just walk in and say, what do you got?
No, everybody who ever comes to my party is always bringing something and offering to help, so. Yeah, and they usually clean up. I have great friends.
Yeah, you got a bunch of Southside ladies, and they come in and they want to help. They're not there to just sit and eat. It's a interesting group. Although I can't say a lot of them are cookers. They're pretty happy.
We're busy women.
They're busy, yes. So, hey, what's going on in your world? You've been listening to part of this. We were talking about what if the market continues down. We're not predicting that, but if it does, at what points does it make a difference in car prices and ticket prices and how much you pay your shortstop? I mean, when is the wealth, if the wealth bubble were to disintegrate a little, when does it, what do you think, is there a connection between the market and the real estate prices that you're dealing with? What do you think, or not?
Not for a while, unless you had a complete dump out for that didn't rebound back, because it's like everybody's all upset about the stuff this morning. I don't know. I'm not going to get upset. It's Monday. People had all weekend to chew on stuff. So I'm not in the panic zone yet. Normally, I'm the first one looking for the lifeboats, but I think I'm just going to wait this one out.
Well, I think you're probably right on that. When one stack, you know, it does cause you, when you look at a Microsoft, all of a sudden drops, you know, $60 in a day. And you look at an Oracle, which is already down. But if you look at one that continues like Micron, it goes up every day. You might look at it and say, "Gee, are those guys susceptible to something like that?" And they may not be. You know, they may not be. You know, but whenever it happens to one, you still have your instincts from the trading floor. If one stock hits the crapo, you look around and look at your stock and say, "How safe is mine?" Right.
Well, and also, so much is tied into algorithms, and then you get the knee-jerk follow-through reaction from some people who don't think it through and just hit this panic sell button. So and then it feeds the algorithms even more. So I think you just have to take a broader view of something without I don't see a big override reason here. You know, has the market been hot? Can people take a little some profit? Maybe, but I don't see anything that big. Of course, I've been busy the last couple of weeks, but some people get to the point where they want it to fail because it would just be another thing for Trump to fail at. So you got to watch what people are setting you up for, too.
Well, that's the truth. But it's been a while since it's been a while since anybody's been on the trading floor. There is one, but it's small.
There's barely a trading floor.
Well, what's your feel from the outside? You probably still a little, maybe, you know, John and Jimmy. Well, Jimmy watched it more because he's been trading some. But what do you make of the market fabric? When I say the market fabric, I mean, during the show here, silver dropped $10, and now it's back to being only down $2.50. The movement, a $30 move in silver on Friday. I mean, I say this not because we don't have, thank God, we don't have everybody trading the silver futures. But it's $150,000 on a one lot, for God's sake. How does something drop?
Oh, you know what? Who's? I want to see where the volume's coming from. I want to see who the volume's coming from. You know, I mean, something's fueling, something's triggering it. I mean, what do you think is triggering it?
I just think that there's the new way the market is put together. It's ripe for problems.
That's why, like I said, the algorithms, the immediate news source of anything, nobody checks to see if anything's true. They take it at fast value, move to the next soundbite, and scare the hell out of themselves.
I think I think people just, when they see something falling, they pull all the bids because there's not a whole lot of retail standing orders, I don't think, like there used to be. So I don't think there's much of a buffer. I mean, if all of a sudden the market were to drop 4% or 5%, I just think everybody pulls their bids. I mean, it's not like...
Well, as you proved by history, there's more money to be made in wrecking a civilization than building it, faster money. And same thing with a market. So there's always a lot faster money to be made on the downside if you're nimble enough to participate. But I don't know. I'm still going to watch. You know, it's this hour before the market opens, there's so much shuffling and elbowing. You know that right now, the things that are trading, and all of a sudden, well, I'd be interested to see what happens at 8:25.
Well, let's follow up that theme a little bit, and let's get to more on some real estate. And I'll ask our other two gentlemen here as well. I could write a paper that, of course, the rest of the world they would grade as an F, but I would say it would be an A. To have a healthy market, I think you need to have the prices should be determined by the people in the marketplace, not necessarily the traders. The idea of when I traded in the OEX, and Aud remembers this, in my opinion, the OEX was the single best retail trader ever imagined. And the reason why I say that is 66 to 67% of all trades were customer to customer, where if you bought something for 2 3/8, you're probably buying it from a Schwab customer who was offered a 2 3/8, and the people in the pit, the industry, only picked up 30 some percent of the trades, maybe between the markets or when there was a time where there wasn't a customer order there, or in a strike there wasn't. And to me, that's a very healthy market, and yet the push from the industry is to, like, I'll bet, what do you think that's down to, Aud, now, with the payment for order flow and stuff? I'm going to guess it's 10%, and I might be being generous.
If that at all.
If that
and
at
the
all.
Whole, yeah, and it's true, what the public doesn't understand about trading, because it's such a small world, is that from the outlet, open outcry was the most fair, equitable source for the world at large that we've seen, especially like you said to the OEX, but in the option market in general, when everybody's fighting over the same bone, the market's just narrowed automatically. And instead of driving a threat through a 2-point wide market on an option, you maybe had a 16th or an 8th. So unfortunately, nobody's really getting good money unless it's the big guys that the people were paying for order flow. That's why no commissions are free, but people don't understand that.
Well, where I'm trying to get, and you guys can, the whole industry is driving. I mean, if you wanted to do it, what I would do is I'd cut the trading floors hours down from 9 to 3, and nothing trades after or before. So whenever you have a market, you have a lot of participants here. Yet the industry wants to do just the opposite. Why would somebody be trading silver now and get caught $9 on a trade? What manner of moron would be doing that? And
because they can.
Because and obviously some firm is going, okay, if this guy really needs to sell it, I'll buy it at like 64. Oops, now it's 73. Oops, and that was 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, the complete clearness and transparency of open outcry, unfortunately, is pretty much disappeared, and if people. Just check the bid and ask spreads on the market.
Terrible.
Most of, unfortunately, your new investors have never experienced the fairness of an open cry trading pit in any form.
Well, it wasn't.
They're
it was
used
to
these big spreads.
It wasn't like because it was open outcry. It was easy access. You could have gone electronically inclusive, but they didn't. They went exclusive, correct?
Yeah.
There was how you did that. Am I getting way too technical for you guys? John and Jimmy, we boring you to hell here?
No.
John went to get some coffee. He's good.
Yeah. He went to get a double espresso. So, Odd, what's going on in your world? The mortgage rates have come down from the beginning of the year. I don't know if they're going to go down much further here, especially with the 10 and 30 are not going down anymore. Nancy seems to think it's going to be 6% forever. For a long period of time, because it kind of always was. I mean, if it is, what do you think on housing? Eventually, people
6% is not bad. I think we'll see 5.5 to 5.75 by June.
I think so.
Yeah.
Is that because the economy is going down or what? I mean, inflation is certainly not going down.
No, I think
down.
That it's just time. I think rates are too pegged too high. I think you'll see the your adjustment in rates.
Well,
and there are actually, I mean, people now, some places are advertising a 5.99. You could buy a rate down if you're willing right now. Rates are right around 6.25. You know, if you want to buy down a point, you could pay some money up front and buy a cheaper rate.
Explain that to us.
You literally could pay to play cheaper. You know, it's like anything else, it has a cost, but you could pay, the buyer could ask their mortgage for how much is it going to be, like a point? A point is like 1 percentage point. So say, if, you know, you have to pay $5,000, $10,000 to buy something down. And it's based on how big the mortgage is also. So you could get a quote from Nancy or anybody saying, you know, what would it cost me to buy my rate down today and lock it? You could do that. It's not as, you know, nice as getting it cheaper up front, but there are options, and people should be just aware of that. Find out what it costs to do that. Check with your accountant for your tax implications, if there's anything helping you with that. But, you know, right now, even if you're getting something at 6%, it's a whole bunch better than 7.5%.
I'm trying to think mathematically if that would ever be worth it for anybody. What do you think, Jen? You're speculating.
Well, I don't know.
You're speculating going forward, right?
You're speculating they're not going to get them any cheaper. You know, if you're in the camp that you are, you think it's never going to go below 6, then maybe you want to buy it down to, you know, 5.5 or, you know, whatever their rate you can get that you can afford.
Well,
I'm
not going to argue for sure that when you say it's going to 5.75, I could see that happening. But I mean, it seems like 6% is kind of like the 40-year average or 50-year average. I mean, I don't think it's going to go to 3.
No, you're never going to see 3 again, which I had told all of my buyers, especially my first-time buyers years ago, when everything was 3-4%. I'm like, I don't care if you buy a garage, buy something, because you're never going to see this again. That was just an aberration in time. But if you could get something, you know, in the 5s, that the market will loosen up, it'll move, that might loosen prices a little. If we'd say you'll get something at 5.5, it's not going to loosen it up initially. You'll get a flood of inventory, but because there's still such a high demand, it's not going to change the prices until we get a more consistent supply.
Well,
it's going to happen over a short time.
All the people who are in there at 3%, 3, you know, 3.20 or something, if it gets to 5.75 and all of a sudden they absolutely need a bigger house, I think there's more of a chance of people making the trade at 5.75 than at 6.5, don't you?
Absolutely, or 7.5, like it was.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. So if you know, and even if you're going to refi at 5.5 to get out of your 7.5.
Audrey, I've been hearing rumblings about canceled deals on the rise. You know, for whatever reason, say, you know, a borrower has a change in circumstances financially and can't qualify for the sale anymore, or if the buyer's got a contingency to sell their own house before they can close on their purchase and that they can't sell their existing house and the deal falls through. Do you see any evidence of that being a common thing? Are most deals, you know, that get signed closing, or are there things that are, you know, making these deals, unworkable, and they sort of fizzle out before the end.
Chad, are you, sorry to interrupt, was it last Tuesday, somebody came out and said it's 16.7% of all deals now are being canceled, and that's a by far a record.
It was. I didn't see it. You know, it like region specific, and I suspect there's some places where it's a bigger problem than it is elsewhere. But I don't have a feel for how much of that is happening in and around Chicago.
Yeah, that was a nationwide number, right? 16.7% that they claim is a record amount. So whatever that means.
Well, I think what you're seeing now is, and there are a few more here. I see a little more, and what you could show is recancellation. Also factor in there is the house might have failed the inspection for some reason, a bad roof, a leaky basement, whatever, and the house goes back on the market. So people, with the high interest rate, the high prices, people are being pickier. They're like, hey, you know what? I'm not buying this house. I'm just going to need a roof in 2 years because I just spent a fortune to buy it. So people are paying more attention to the condition of. They're not just buying. 3 years ago, it didn't matter what it was. People had to get a house. They just bought it. And now people were getting pickier, but they want the pretty house. Well, they've realized that even the pretty house might have a leaky basement. So I think they're paying more attention to the true condition of the house, which they should. And then the house goes back on the market. What's more interesting about that statistic to me is how fast do they go back under contract? How fast does somebody else pick it up? That's what's really determining. Not every deal goes through. John, you're right. Somebody loses a job, or the favorite thing of disaster of a lot of realtors, that this happens more than you would think. And Nancy knows this too, that somebody's qualifying for a mortgage, they're qualified, but maybe they're tight. Their ratios are tight. So, we watch them. What you tell them, I tell them, as it tells them, most realtors will tell you is, okay, your ratio is very close to 50%, 45%, whatever your mortgage company is allowing. Don't go out and buy new furniture. Don't charge new furniture. Don't go buy a new car. I don't want you to charge a stick of gum until you close your deal. And sure enough, every now and then, I remember a few years ago, my friend had a house, same thing. The guy was going to pay attention. He thought he'd do everything, and he and his wife get the closing. And the mortgage company also runs your credit again right before closing to make sure that you're not an idiot or trying to scam them. And sure enough, came in, and they had stopped the closing. They said, did you buy a new vehicle? To the guy, he goes, yeah, a couple days ago. Well, he bought a $75,000 truck. So he was now the proud owner of a new truck, and
no house.
Closing fell apart. His wife left the room crying. So guess how good that guy's life was going to be.
I hope he at least had a club camp where he could sleep in a truck.
Either that, or she's just going to sell it, leave him by the curb.
Art and Jan, to follow up on that a little bit, what if Jan, who still does some closings? What if Jan's got a closing and you've got a sale in the area where, out of the blue, people's taxes are up 40%? What do you suppose that did to some closings in that area?
You know what? It would have to be different from what you were told. So say your taxes were $5,000 by the time you closed. It was new bills came out.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what happened.
Yeah, and that would be something that people... it's not what it was represented, but, that's a gray area. But I know that some people a while ago, same thing happened, and it wasn't the tax, it was something that would incur a cost, and they walked, and they lost their earnest money. They didn't care because the ramifications were too big. So it's something, but you're going to know, or you're going to have an inclination. I mean, if you live anywhere in Illinois,
one of our friends had this house up in Edgebrook forever, and I think he was $15,000 in the taxes, and now he's 22. I got to believe if that would have happened in the middle of a closing, that would have left a mark.
I think that that people of Illinois need to start letting people know they're unhappy with that solution, that Illinois ought to figure out how to balance their budget, and let's see where all that money's going in Illinois, because I don't think we're getting a whole bunch of great stuff out of it.
The other side,
there's a lot to be seen, but that's an entirely different topic.
Audrey, the other side of the canceled deals problem. Are you seeing a lot of listings expiring or being pulled after 60 or 90 days because they haven't had any nibbles or nobody's come close to their sales price?
So they just pulled them off the market. You know what? Unless it's overpriced, either due to the realtor's pricing or the seller's insistence that my house is worth, $300,000 more than anybody else's in the neighborhood. No, they're moving. Houses are moving. What's hurting us right now is the weather, because unless you're going to be homeless, you're not outside. It's 24. It's no fun to look at a house right now for anybody. So the only good thing I will tell you is that it is the perfect time to look for a house, because you're going to see how drafty that house is, if it needs windows, if it needs insulation. Very cold weather is the perfect time to house shop, just to see what the house is made of.
Do your neighbors shovel their walks and driveways? What does the block look like?
Well, you can't tell what the flowers look like in the lawn.
But it's just—it's very interesting. I always tell my kids, it's a great time to go after a big rainstorm, or it's good to go during the winter, because if you walk in this really pretty house, and you could feel the wind moving through the house, then you're going to have a really big bill of windows coming through.
Well, what's the first thing you're supposed to
do? Money and heartache later. Mm-hmm.
Bud, what's the first thing you're supposed to look at in wintertime?
Location?
No, if there's snow on the roof, it means your insulation's okay.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah, and that is very true. I've only had one cup of coffee, so no more snaps, pop quizzes. It is very true. I drive through the houses and subconsciously will look at the roofs to see if there's snow on the roofs. If it's all gone, then all your heat is going right through your
roof. Yeah, no insulation there.
Speaking of which, I talk about kind of memory lane yesterday. Bud was digging through some old boxes and was coming out to some of her grammar school pictures and high school pictures, and really unbelievable.
I'm cleaning house in case I kick off.
God. So, but I mean, it's amazing how the pictures of even like her parents. Grammar school pictures, how all the kids were dressed right. It was a whole different world than today. I mean, look at these pictures of these graduations and even classes and first communions and stuff.
Oh, God,
kids with hands folded, all dressed nice and neat, sitting at their desk.
Yeah.
they have the fear of God, the looks of some of these kids' faces, and Sister So and So standing behind them.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. But these I went to a public school, and people were still scared of their teachers.
Oh, yeah.
But these are in areas now that you could never send your kids to those schools. I mean, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
You think about it.
And just think, we all got a pretty good education. I went to a Chicago public school, and I got a very good education. And even though my graduating class had 1,200 kids in it, we had to graduate at McCormick Place. It was so big. And we had three shifts at the high school, advanced placement classes, honors classes. And the time I applied to college, I got into everyone I applied to. So it was, there was still a great education to be had at that point in time.
Well, the people thought so much of education. There's a picture, Jan, and we got a dash. Odd and I used to go to, we had a client, unfortunately passed. You really can't bitch at a client for leaving if he dies, right? It's not like he found a new firm. This guy was what they call him on MASH? He was a chest cutter at I think he was at Mercy Hospital, but he became the head of the Illinois the Lung Association.
He was a lovely man,
just a nice guy. He's from Okinawa, him and his wife, just terrific, great. Got the kids. How nice were the kids? I mean, boy, talk about the mother.
A wonderful family.
The mother'd say jump, and the kid'd say how high. It was one of those kind of things. And but they would run this thing in McCormick Place every year. So we, of course, bought tickets to the first look, and we had our tuxes on. It was always fun to see the guys and the women thinking they're still fitting in the same last year's tux and outfit. Because let's just say, the guys, there's stuff spilling out of both.
only men do that. I'd like to break it there.
God,
women are out getting the new dress. It's you guys that say, yeah, I look the same as I did 20 years ago.
Anyway, but one of the pictures in there, they had this huge picture collage, And they showed a rural school back in God knows where, back when there was tuberculosis. Well, tuberculosis had not been a cure. What was tuberculosis cure was what? Erythromycin? One of those. It wasn't penicillin. It was one of the other antibiotics. Yeah. Anyway, but there's a picture of this rural school, and it's snowing. Snow all over the place, and they took the ceiling and the walls down of the school because they didn't want anybody to catch TB. And the kids are outside on the floor at their desks in their winter coats learning. That's how people used to take, you know, education that seriously. Can you imagine that? There's like, how many kids were in the class? Oh, it was like 30 of them. And there they are out in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Outside. I mean, what a classic picture.
And do you remember that sheet that I found buried from someplace in my great-grandparents' stuff? It was a test that you had to take like in sixth or eighth grade, and the questions were so hard. I wonder how many adults could even answer those now. I wish I could put my hands on that.
Well, it had to do with the history of War 1812 and math questions that, you know, most kids without a calculator can't take now. Pretty interesting. There's actually, I think I have one around here. It was the eighth grade test for people in Tennessee in 1922 or something.
Yeah,
there was stuff on there I couldn't answer.
Yeah. I saw my high school had an exam. This is back from the 20s. They put it in one of the alumni magazines one time. Well, one of the questions was, if so-and-so lends $50 to so-and-so at 5% interest, how much will it earn in compound interest by year so-and-so? Could you imagine anybody today?
Without a calculator.
Without a calculator.
You had a pencil and a piece of paper. Just keep it multiplying. Yeah. You get there. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. Good stuff. S&P futures down 22. We've come back down 45 when we came in, so we're halfway back. NASDAQ futures down 137. They were down 240. So they're down. They're back 40% of the way. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.